we have perfect weather for Kali Puja. Huh? That song that we just sang was the first Bengali song that I ever learned. Yeah. And it's the song that is probably referred to more than any other song in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. He probably sang it more than any other song. And it sums up his personal spiritual attitude better than any other song. I won't go into it now because I'll mention it later. I'll give the whole translation and everything, because so many times he refers to different lines from that song. So I thought I would talk about Mother Kali today. You all know that we'll be observing Kali Puja tonight. The puja will begin at 7:30. And this, of course, is a fascinating topic. We know there's so many different conceptions of God, of the divine, not only in the Hindu tradition and on other traditions as well, but this has to be one of the most fascinating. Huh? Even the imagery, the symbolism, the different conceptions that we have, even among worshippers of Mother Kali, how she became the presiding deity for the dacoits and the robbers and all of that, and at the same time worshipped by Sri Ramakrishna as such a loving image of Mother, is such a beautiful combination. Even the metaphysics of it, as the source of everything, good and bad, the worship of the terrible, the worship of the beautiful, all of this comes under this heading of worship of Mother Kali. So I wanted to speak a little bit about this from a different point of view, because historically, just to understand the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna, the origin of our monastic tradition, the relationship that Swami Vivekananda had to Sri Ramakrishna, and how that the transformation that took place with this young Western educated young man who hated this idea of Mother Kali came to Sri Ramakrishna and became one of the greatest devotees of Mother Kali. To go through all of this, and the Holy Mother, I'll just mention a little bit, because that's also a fascinating story, how she looked upon Sri Ramakrishna as Mother Kali. He looked upon her as Mother Kali. It was an interesting marriage that they had. Huh? Each looking upon the other as the embodiment of the Divine Mother in some sense. So I wanted to start out just a little bit. Almost everyone here, of course, knows the imagery and the symbolism behind Mother Kali. Now, we talk about Mother Kali. Generally, we're talking about the image of Mother Kali that we see in Dakshineshwar, who's called Bhavatarini there. There are many other images that are far more graphic and gruesome, even. Huh? These Ugra Murtis that Sri Ramakrishna warned people, don't keep these just in your house as decoration. So there are all sorts of things. The one that we worship and Sri Ramakrishna worshipped at Dakshineshwar is relatively benign. At least half, we have the forearms, and two of them, in a very benign manner, are offering freedom from fear and boons. And then on the other hand, of course, she has her sword, and she's holding a severed head, and she has this mundamala. She has this garland of skulls around her neck. There's a beautiful line from a song that is Brahmando Chilona Jokon, Mundamala, yeah. Before this universe ever existed, Mother, where did you find this mala made of human heads? Very interesting line. And she's wearing a girdle of human arms that are cut off, severed arms and everything. So it looks rather gruesome. And we can imagine what the British thought, how they were horrified. So we have, and this is also important, that Sri Ramakrishna came to Calcutta at the time that it was capital of British India, the British Raj. And all of the young men who came, mostly they went to Christian missionary schools, and they were so much influenced by what the British thought. So much so that if the British didn't like something, they also didn't like it. Many of the Western educated. This was partly why the Brahmo Samaj held the different beliefs that they did with regard to image worship and other things like that. So this is our Mother Kali, black complexion, and standing on the image of Shiva, who's lying prostrate with her tongue sticking out. Some people say, why is her tongue sticking out? She's embarrassed. She's standing on the chest of her husband. Otherwise, we don't know. There's a lot of the symbolism that we don't know. If you go to Kali Ghat, anybody been to Kali Ghat? Her tongue goes all the way down to the ground. And made of gold. It's really fantastic. Yeah. And then she stays in the cremation ground. Her companions are jackals. And he, of course, engages in battle and kills demons and all sorts of things. So it's an interesting conception of mother. Swami Swamiji was once asked about this, how do we look upon mother in such a gruesome form? And he said, what kind of mother do you want? Do you want a namby-pamby mother who won't protect you if anyone's running after you? Or do you want one that'll be in the mouth of the tiger if the tiger comes after the child? So this is that conception of the Divine Mother. So this history of Kali worship, first of all, it's probably not very old. Not like other forms of worship in India. We don't know really the origins of it. Dr. Sarkar, the very funny doctor that used to treat Ramakrishna, he had this theory that she was a Chantal woman. Chantal, yeah, Magi. Actually, there's some people who really feel that this was kind of a mixture of some tribal ideas also. So there could be some funny type of truth to that. Of course, for Sri Ramakrishna, we're talking about the universal aspect. We're talking about the Divine Mother herself as one with the Brahman. But anyhow, in the early days, we see that there was this element and belief and feeling that this Mother Kali was a bloodthirsty mother and had to be given offerings. So there were was always this balidan, this offering of goat or sheep or even water buffalo sometime. And always the rumor of this Narabali, that there would be human sacrifice. That among these dacoits and everything. So this is what the British hated, this idea. And then, of course, many of the educated British, they were embarrassed by it, whether they hated it or not. They were, I would say, more embarrassed by that. The funny thing is that the one person who was perhaps most responsible for changing this image of Kali worship was Sister Nivedita. Yeah, she gave a very well-attended lecture at Albert Hall, and then a second time she spoke at the Kali Ghat also, explaining the beautiful imagery and the symbolism of this worship of Mother Kali, and the educated people seeing that a woman from the West who would come, educated woman and everything, speaking so eloquently on the subject, that this did change the image, at least to a certain extent. Now, this is all Mother Kali seen from a very external outsider's point of view. The devotees themselves worship Mother Kali as their own mother with that sweet element. This is, of course, there'll be both sides, but at least those from the Ramakrishna school. Sri Ramakrishna, this was his attitude. He only saw sweetness. He only saw that love of the mother for the child in this relationship that he had. And this will take us to Ram Prasad. And I want to talk about Ram Prasad because he played a very important role in the worship of Kali and also in Sri Ramakrishna's attitude. Almost to the extent where I would compare him to a kind of John the Baptist in the life of Christ. that John the Baptist was not considered anywhere near the stature of Christ, of course, or even the disciples, but he had to be the one to baptize him. He had to be the one to kind of start this new wave of spirituality. There's always somebody in the background who seems to do that. In the life of Chaitanya Deva, he wasn't responsible for starting this new kirtan-inspired Vaishnava tradition in Bengal. It was really Advaitacharya. Advaitacharya and others, they had already started these little kirtan groups and everything, and Chaitanya Deva used to laugh at them and make fun of them, and they were scared of him. They would, if they saw him coming, they'd run in the other direction. And yet, he was the one who, after his conversion, is the one who really gave life to it. So Sri Ramakrishna gave life. He's the one who really made this a living tradition, this type of worship of Mother Kali, with this sweet element to it. But as I say, it was really Ram Prasad, as far as we know. There may have been an earlier writers and spiritual seekers who had this attitude, but he's the one that we know of mostly. And then following him, Kamalakanta and many, many others. But he's the one who really changed this whole tradition, where the emphasis was not on this bloodthirsty mother who was slaying demons and everything, but a very sweet relationship. To worship God the same way a small child, and to rely on God the same way a small child relies upon its very own mother. I had a very great interest in Ram Prasad. I have to admit personally that when I was a graduate student, I came this close to deciding to do my dissertation on Ram Prasad. But then I was kind of persuaded, no, do something in the Sanskrit side rather than the Bengali side, so I didn't do it. But I read books on him, I read all of the poetry and the songs that he had written, and went to his birthplace at one time. So I really felt something, a very special relationship with Ram Prasad. So I'll just say a little bit about his lifetime. He was born in 1723. So Sri Ramakrishna was born just over 100 years after him. So we have a full century before that. And we'll see that there are so many parallels. Even if you go, you can go to his home. It's Hali Shohar. Hali Shohar is a very famous place because Chaitanya Dev's guru, Ishwarpuri, was also from there. And this is where Ram Prasad lived. His house is there. You can visit that. It's a pilgrimage place. Many people go. The temple where he worshipped is there. It's a very nice place. And I went. I'll talk about my landlord a little bit. We went together in 1978. I went for the first time. Anyhow, we'll see so many parallels to the life of Sri Ramakrishna here. They say he planted also a Panchavati there and did a spiritual practice there. All of these things are, you can see where all of these things took place. So from a young age, he was very spiritually minded, and yet they arranged a marriage for him. And of course, he wasn't a monk like Sri Ramakrishna. In fact, had a daughter who appears in many of his songs. That is, a daughter will show up mysteriously. He's making a fence and he needs help from the other side, and some little girl comes and does it and everything, and then he goes and he thanks his daughter, and she says, "No, Baba, I was at home the whole time." So many times he felt that Mother Kali appeared to him in the form of his daughter. So anyhow, that's one thing about him. Then, so he spent most of his time in spiritual practice, even after getting married, and then father died, and they were in poverty, he had to go to Calcutta. We see this so many times. The life of Sri Ramakrishna, he had to go with his elder brother to go to Calcutta to find some work. And he got a job as a clerk. So he kept accounts, and he was not very well liked by any of his co-workers because he was an honest person and he wouldn't take bribes. And they all thought that he was too... conceited and thought too much of themselves, so they didn't really like him very much. And they noticed that he was always writing something in the ledger of his notebook, where you keep account book. And so one day they happened to see that he's writing the name of Durga, Kali, just so different names, and also some poetry that he had written just in that account book. So they thought, now we have him. So they took the book, and they took the book to his boss, and they said, look what you're Ram Prasad. You think he's so wonderful. Instead of working, he's just doodling and fooling and writing different things like that. So his boss looked at it and started reading. And the first poem that Ram Prasad had written said, Amai Daoma Tobal Dadi. Let me be the keeper of your accounts. So I don't want to be an ordinary accountant. Let me be the keeper of your accounts. So it goes on that, look, who's looking after your accounts now? Shiva. He can't even remember if he's wearing his clothes or not. How is he going to be anyone? Let me do it, Mother. I want to be your accountant. So a very nice song. And his boss read this over and over again, and then they say tears start coming down his eyes. It turned out his employer was a great devotee of Mother Kali and was very much touched by all of this. And then he said to Ram Prasad that, look, you weren't born to do this type of clerical work. You go back to your home, and whatever salary I was giving you before, I'll continue to give it to you. And you just write your poetry. So this is what happened. He went back, and barely enough money to live, of course. But then one day he was, his home is not far from the Ganga. He was taking his bath and singing some songs, and the boat is going by, and one of the local Maharajas was there and heard him singing and was also charmed and came and met him and found out about his writing. Anyhow, he became a patron also. So then after that, he didn't have to worry about money at all the rest of his life, and he lived a long life till 80. And they say that on the new moon night of Kali Puja, when he was 80 years old, that he made the image of Mother Kali with his own hands and worshipped it and was in Ganga and singing songs to Mother Kali and passed away. So this is the story of Ram Prasad. So Sri Ramakrishna, when he started on this uncharted path of this worship of Mother Kali, this, of course, was the first spiritual mood that overtook him when he went to Dakshineswar, because he was a priest of the Kali temple there. He used to say, Mother, reveal yourself to me. You revealed yourself to Ram Prasad. Why won't you reveal yourself to me? So he always would reference Ram Prasad and would constantly be singing his songs. Somehow, Thakur, you know, he could barely read, but he would hear these songs, and what a memory he had. How many hundreds of songs he must have known just from hearing them a few times. So he knew all of these Ram Prasad songs. You go through the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, you see how many times he's singing his songs. So these songs represent a spiritual mood, but they also have a very deep philosophical meaning to them. And this is also the other aspect of the worship of Mother Kali. We have the psychological side, that we can worship God as mother, God as father, and any of the relationships. Psychologically, there may be a little bit of softness in that feeling, worshiping God as mother, that it won't have that same element of fear. The father is the one who disciplines. The mother is the one that we go running to, that if we want any favor, we'll go to the mother. So that attitude of intimacy, worshiping God as mother, was felt to be something that had this sweetness to it, that we can ask anything of mother. Father, we have to be a little careful. Now, of course, it's not universally true. Fathers can also be sweet and loving. And mothers can also be mean sometimes. But this is just kind of the traditional way of looking at it. So this psychologically, this is a way of worshiping God with no element of fear, and that we can force our demands on the mother, and we can really take this attitude of Abhiman. This is a very nice attitude that devotees of Divine Mother take, where let's say, Mother, you don't show yourself to me, I'll never look at you again. I won't worship you. I'll tell everybody in town that you're not a good mother. Like that. We can take that type of attitude because there's that sweet, intimate relationship is there. Ram Prasad wrote in one of his songs, "This bitterly contested suit between the mother and her son, what sport it is," says Ram Prasad. "I shall not cease tormenting you till you yourself shall yield the fight and take me in your arms at last." Then another song, "Mother, am I your eight-month-old child? Your red eyes cannot frighten me. A deed of gift I hold in my hand, attested by your husband Shiva. I shall sue you if I must, and with a single point shall win." So the child can get angry at the mother. The child is scolded by the mother. The child still runs to the mother. Who else will the child go to? And sees the mother everywhere. A very, very small child, that the whole world is the mother. Huh? When they're first born, they can't distinguish the mother's body from their own body or their mother's body from the world itself. This is seeing the mother everywhere. It's an actual literal fact with an infinite till they reach a certain age. So we have this philosophical idea that everything we see is mother, is the Divine Mother. There's another very beautiful song that's referred to many times. If you read Towards the Goal Supreme, very beautiful book, small book that has some of the teachings and sayings of Swami Virajananda. He quotes this song also. "Oh, my mind, worship Kali to your heart's content, repeating day and night the Guru's mantra. When lying down, feel that you are prostrating at mother's feet. While sleeping, feel that you are meditating on mother. Let your eating of food be oblations to her. Mother Kali is the embodiment of all the sounds of the alphabet. Whatever enters your ears is her holy name. Joyously, Ram Prasad says, mother is manifest in all things. While walking about the town, feel that you are circumambulating Mother Kali." There's also a Sanskrit hymn, I think by Shankaracharya, almost the identical idea. Now, in Sri Ramakrishna's own personal life, of course, we know that his first vision of God was of Mother Kali, and this idea of Bakulata. Bakulata, we read in the English translation, means yearning or longing or restlessness for God. But Sri Ramakrishna used to say that the joy that I felt after realizing Mother was equivalent to the pain that I felt before realizing her. The pain was that great, that intense, that feeling of desperation, almost. And we see it in this relationship. If we ever go to the mall, for example, and you see a small child that somehow got separated from his mother, and he's screaming and yelling, "Mother, mother, where are you?" Huh? That's what Sri Ramakrishna did. That's how he felt at the absence of this union with the Divine Mother. And it was so similar to that that many people thought that he was actually in some state of mourning or longing for his own mother. Perhaps his mother had passed away and he was in such a state of grief that he's rolling on the ground, yelling, calling mother, mother, mother. But of course it was the Divine Mother. So this is also one of the best ways of understanding this Vyakulata, this tremendous agony of heart that comes when we feel that we can't live without our mother, that we've lost our mother somehow. Where is she? We have to see her. We have to have her. This is the feeling that Sri Ramakrishna had. The other attitude that came to Sri Ramakrishna was this very firm belief that nothing happened that wasn't the will of the Divine Mother and that he was an instrument in her hands. Now, this attitude is something that I personally feel is not very helpful for most people. And it, for most of us, we can't really say, I am an instrument, whatever I do, the Divine Mother is making me do. That there's a tremendous amount of purity of heart and surrender that has to be there first before we can say anything like that. So Sri Ramakrishna could do it, because in his case it was literally true that the words that came out of his mouth were not even his words. This was his conviction, that when we read in the song, and there are many songs, not just this one, and Kamalakanta songs, and Jamabalautam Niboli, as you make me speak, so I speak. That was his conviction, that it was the words of the Divine Mother that were coming through his mouth, that she kept pushing them over to him, that he never ran out of things to say. Just as when they husk this rice, that someone will be there pushing it over the paddy, and then they'll be husking it. So there's someone who keeps pushing it there. So that was really his literal feeling. So the song that we sang in the beginning was something that is perfectly suited to the lips of Sri Ramakrishna. For us, we can pray, Mother, may the day come when I really feel myself to be an instrument in your hands, when there's no sense of pride or ego, that I'm not doing anything out of my own selfish desire. I'm doing everything out of a feeling of sacrifice to you, and let everything that you undone, let that be done through me. We can pray that let us be an instrument in your hands. Any other song, all is done after thine own sweet will. Thou art in truth self-willed, O Redeemer of mankind. Thou workest thine own work, men only call it theirs. Thou it is that holdest the elephant in the mire. Thou that helpest the lame scale the loftiest hill. On some thou dost bestow the bliss of Brahmanhood, yet others thou dost hurl into this world below. Thou art the moving force, and I the mere machine. The house am I, and thou the spirit dwelling there. I am the chariot, and thou the charioteer. I move alone as thou, O Mother, movest me. Now, the other positive thing, even for us, is that this attitude at least eliminates this feeling of pride. That, yes, I'm responsible. I am the one who did it. At least we can get that much out of this. So we have all of these more or less understandable attitudes and teachings and everything with regard to Mother Kali. The one thing that we don't have much of a clue about is who was this Mother Kali for Sri Ramakrishna? That he saw all the time, that spoke to him, that was almost like a guardian angel. This, I think, is beyond our ability to understand. We can have some philosophical conception and say, yes, this is really the supreme Brahman, and that we're superimposing some idea of motherhood and everything. But she was so real to him that unless we have that experience, I think we're just kind of guessing. What did it really mean to him? That he would hear the jingling of her anklets. So we can't imagine. For him, that she was more real than anything else. So this was that Mother Kali in the eyes of Sri Ramakrishna. Now, the philosophical side is also equally interesting, because this Mother Kali always represents the Shakti side. We have always these two elements, metaphysical elements. One will be the inactive, the other the active, generally thought of as male and female. We have Purusha and Prakriti, these two terms that actually come to mean male and female in the Sankhya tradition. We'll have the same thing with Shiva and Shakti, or with Kali and Brahman, that she represents the divine power through which this universe is manifested and upheld and withdrawn. So this will be that element, and there'll always be a combination of the two. There'll be Shiva and Shakti, and they'll be together. Now, Sri Ramakrishna goes a little bit further than this. He says, no, they're not two. That what we mean when we talk about the Divine Mother is we're talking about that same Brahman, only when the Shakti aspect is active. It may be active, it may be inactive. It's the same. The snake may be coiled up, the kundalini, just coiled up and unmoving, or it may be slithering around. It's the same snake, only we give it a different name. One time we'll call it Brahman, the other time we'll call it Kali. Swami Vivekananda, Narendra, after his little mini conversion to a Kali worshiper, we'll get to that, he complained to Sri Ramakrishna that I've been meditating on Mother Kali, but nothing has happened. He was complaining like that. So Sri Ramakrishna said to him, "All in good time, my child. Kali is none other than Brahman." So this was the slight difference between the traditional Shakta idea that you have the two side by side or connected. But he said, "Kali is none other than Brahman. That which is called Brahman is really Kali. She is the primal energy. When that energy remains inactive, I call it Brahman. And when it creates, preserves, or destroys, I call it Shakti or Kali. What you call Brahman, I call Kali." So a very high philosophical conception, and at the same time she's talking to him. How these two things go side by side is very hard to understand. Brahman and Kali are not different. They are like fire and its power to burn. If one thinks of fire, one must think of its power to burn. If one recognizes Kali, one must also recognize Brahman. Again, if one recognizes Brahman, one must recognize Kali. Brahman and its power are identical. It is Brahman whom I address as Shakti or Kali. Now, how does this compare or contrast with more traditional ideas of Advaita Vedanta, where this universe is considered to be something less than real? Illusory, perhaps, or just dreamlike, or somehow not reaching that level of reality. Mithya. We have the Brahma Satya Jagat Mithya, this idea. It really, for Sri Ramakrishna, there was no ultimate contradiction. He used to say that this looking upon this world is unreal is for the sake of distinguishing between that which is permanent and that which is impermanent. That is for the sake of sadhana, where we try to realize the ultimate reality as different from body, mind, and senses and external objects. This is what will get us to the roof. When we get to the roof, then we see that what we've denied as somehow asat, unreal, is nothing but that same reality. So if we think in terms of the snake and the rope. So Sri Ramakrishna used to say, he was asked, "Is this world then unreal?" He said, "As long as you haven't realized God, it's unreal." So that means we can take that attitude. We can say that the snake is not real. There is no snake. It's unreal. There's only a rope there. But when we realize that what we're seeing is the rope the whole time, even when I think it's a snake, I'm looking at a rope, then we can say that, yes, it's real, only with that appearance, with name and form of something else. So the Shakta idea is that kind of a higher truth, or the Vijnana truth. The truth of the Jnani will be that Brahman alone is real. For the Vijnani, everything is real. And this is manifestation of God, or manifestation of Brahman, or manifestation of the Divine Mother. Really Shakti, manifestation of Shakti, we can say. Swami Turiyananda, who was known in our order as one of the great Jnanis and the Dvaitins, on his deathbed he was heard to say, "Brahma Satyam, Jagat Satyam." Brahman is real, this world is also real. Because he saw nothing but Brahman everywhere. This is the truth of the Upanishads. The Sarvam Kalvidam Brahman, everything is nothing but Brahman itself. So we see that this Sri Ramakrishna's conception of Kali is so vast, almost unlimited. We see it in all the different aspects. She's the embodiment of death and destruction, because everything comes from her, as well as sweetness and bliss, the highest understanding of the Absolute as containing the saguna element. This is really saying that Brahman, the nirguna and saguna aspects of Brahman are both real. How can we say it's unreal? It belongs to Brahman. So this was his attitude, of course. We can take different attitudes. But ultimately, he would say, who can know who this Mother Kali is? This is the final truth. We have some beautiful songs of Kamala Kanta and others that they'll always go back to that idea. Even can we say, is she male or female? What it boggles the mind if we try to understand this ultimate mystery of the universe. So she's inscrutable because she's Maya herself. She's inscrutable, and he would say, Sri Ramakrishna, she is more than we can understand. Her nature is Mahamaya, the great enchantress, that she is inscrutable. And he would quote this other song of Ram Prasad, who is there who can understand what Mother Kali is? Even the six darshanas, that means all of philosophy that we find in the Hindu tradition, are powerless to reveal her. She cannot be found in any of the philosophical texts or anything. Now, Holy Mother, I mentioned very briefly that Sri Ramakrishna worshipped her as an embodiment of Mother Kali. That one time she was sitting in his room and massaging his feet, putting oil on his feet, and she looked at him and said, how do you look upon me? It was very bold of her. She was very shy even to say something like that. So he said that the mother who was in the Nahabat, that meant his earthly mother, who lives upstairs in the Nahabat, and that mother who was in the temple, that means Mother Kali, and the one who is now massaging my feet, I see as one and the same. And of course, he worshipped her on the Palaharani Puja day, as is Shodashi, as aspect of Mother Kali. Now, for her, and Holy Mother, for her part, sometimes she would be more in touch, or at least more willing to admit it, with her universal divine side, and would very grudgingly admit that, yes, that those who they're talking about is Mother Kali, that she she was very grudgingly, only when forced very much, and in a certain mood, would say yes. That, and Thakur said many times that divinity that dwelled within her was far greater than the divinity that dwelled within him. He said, you can get that which dwells within me, you can get angry. But if you get angry, that divinity, that the hooded snake will come up, that dwells within her, you'll be in big trouble. So he looked upon her that way. And when Sri Ramakrishna passed away, Holy Mother said, oh, Mother Kali, what have I done that you have deserted me? So she felt that somehow Mother Kali, in the form of Sri Ramakrishna, was no longer there. So this is the Holy Mother. Now, Swami Vivekananda, this is also very interesting, because we don't generally associate Swamiji, and of course in the early days not at all, with his mother worship, and especially the Mother Kali, because he was a member of the Brahmo Samaj. Probably, I never thought about this earlier, but probably he never set foot into the temple of Mother Kali until that one night that we know about, that I'll talk about. Maybe he never even saw it, or from a distance, because they had to sign a pledge that they wouldn't enter into any temple. The Kali temple at Dakshineswari isn't a big temple where you can actually enter into it, right? You can climb the steps. If you want to enter into it, there's just barely room to make pranam there. It's just a tiny little space. So probably he never entered into it, maybe never even saw from the outside. But in any event, he wasn't a fan of this Kali worship. And he couldn't believe that someone as spiritually illumined as Sri Ramakrishna could be a worshiper of Mother Kali. And he used to tell people, he still goes there. How is it possible? Meaning to the Kali temple. So this is what Swamiji was in the beginning, that he had no interest in this worship of Mother Kali. It was something that was very distasteful to him. That it seemed a very crude type of thing, because he had picked this up from the Brahmos and the British and everything else. So he used to tell Sri Ramakrishna, this is a hallucination, that these are all figments of your imagination, and superstition, he used to say. This is superstition. He didn't care for this image worship at all. Then what happened? Of course, we know his father passed away, and they were in a state of terrible poverty. And one day, Narendra went to Sri Ramakrishna, and his argument was a very funny argument. He said, I don't really believe in Mother Kali, but I know that you do, so maybe she'll listen to you. Now, is that a funny argument? So that means that deep down he must really believe that she's there, but he's unwilling to admit it or anything. So he said, you please tell your Mother Kali that please look after our family. They're starving. At least let them have enough to eat and clothes and everything, a place to live, all of that. So Sri Ramakrishna also had a very funny reply. He said, she won't listen to me because you don't like her. He said, you yourself will have to say that we'll have to go to her. So for some reason, Narendra that night, I don't know when this is, probably 1884, something like that, he agreed that he will go to Mother Kali, that he had great faith in the words of Sri Ramakrishna. So Thakur said, if you go there and you directly ask her, that she'll answer your prayers. She won't do it for me, you yourself have to do it. So, Narendra later, Swamiji says, a strange mood overcame me. He said, a sort of profound inebriation possessed me. I was reeling. A firm conviction gripped me that I would actually see Mother and hear her words. Coming to the temple, I saw the Mother was actually pure consciousness. Now, the other thing, when Sri Ramakrishna, when he had his vision of Mother Kali, what was it? Wave after wave of consciousness and bliss came and overwhelmed me, and I lost all outer consciousness. We don't read anything about seeing the form of Mother Kali or anything. He also saw her as pure consciousness. Anyhow, I saw the Mother was actually pure consciousness, was actually living, and was really the fountainhead of infinite love and beauty. My heart swelled with loving devotion and beside myself with bliss. I made repeated salutations to her praying, Mother, what did he say? Grant me discrimination, grant me divine knowledge and devotion. Ordain that I may always have an unobstructed vision of you. Nothing about food and clothes and anything. My heart was flooded with peace. The whole universe completely disappeared. And Mother alone remained filling my heart. Now, is this the same realization that Sri Ramakrishna had? He said the same thing. Everything disappeared. I saw only this ocean of consciousness. Not quite to that extent, because Thakur really was found lying unconscious for a long time. But something like that, something on that level, without really losing consciousness. Anyhow, he returned to his room, and then Sri Ramakrishna, very innocently, said, oh, how did it work? Did you? Because he's playing this trick on him. He's the one who's doing it, who's making Narendra forget of why he went there and everything. Did you remember? And he said, I got there, I got a little carried away. I forgot to say anything about their poverty and everything. He said, go back and do it again. So he went back, same thing happened. And then finally he went back and he remembered, but felt embarrassed. He said he felt ashamed to ask anything of the Divine Mother, to be so small-minded, and again, only ask for divine knowledge and devotion and love. So he spent the night in the room, Sri Ramakrishna's room, and Thakur taught him this song, this Amarama Tonghi Tara. There's a beautiful song that, my mother, that you were the savior. It's a beautiful song. Can we sing it tonight? Anybody knows that song? Somebody can sing it. Huh? Nobody can sing it. Yeah, okay. Anyhow, very beautiful song. And, okay, not now, tonight. And when people came the next morning, they saw that Narendra was sleeping. They're wondering, why is he sleeping at this hour? And Sri Ramakrishna said, shh, don't wake him up. He was up the whole night singing that song over and over and over again in this state of joy the whole night. And Sri Ramakrishna was beaming. He was so happy. My Narendra has accepted Mother Kali. So it was a very, very nice thing. This devotion to Mother Kali is something that remained hidden within the heart of Narendra. Now, maybe part of it was when the mother locked the key and the chest, and Thakur said that you won't get the contents until your work is done. Maybe part of it was this devotion of Mother Kali. Part of it was, of course, he said, that experience that you've had of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, that this will be held back from you until you really know who you are. Anyhow, we find that this remained a little hidden, or he didn't like to talk about it. And especially in the West, that he wanted to teach principles. He didn't even speak about Sri Ramakrishna very much in the West. He wanted to teach these principles. But still, there's something that was very profoundly important in the life of Swamiji. One of his letters, he wrote a letter to Mary Hale. He wrote, "Kali worship is my special fad. You never heard me preach it or read of my preaching it in India. I only preach what is good for universal humanity. If there is any curious method which applies entirely to me, I keep it a secret and there it ends." One of the great turning points in the life of Swamiji was when he went with some of his Western disciples to Kashmir. And when did he go? What year did he go? 1898. Whoa, good. Okay, he went in 1898. And they went on pilgrimage to Amarnath. And when he was in the cave of Amarnath, he had a very profound experience. So profound that his health was shattered to a certain extent. He felt that he had received that boon from Shiva, not to die until he himself would will it. And after that, everything was Shiva. Shiva, 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 only talking about Shiva. And without much explanation, Sister Nivedita writes that somehow this great devotion to Shiva got replaced by devotion to Mother Kali. And that Swamiji at that time, they said on his lips were constantly the songs of Ram Prasad, and that he felt this devotion of the young child to its own mother. And he told them, wherever he turned, he felt the presence of the mother as if she were a person in the room. So now we're seeing similar to Sri Ramakrishna's own experience, and he felt as if every step of his, that as if he were being held by the hand by Mother Kali or Sri Ramakrishna. And in his mind, there's no real distinction at this point. Even when we read that, when Thakur says, until Mother's work is done or until my work is done, they're almost interchangeable at that point. So this absorption in this idea of the Divine Mother, Mother Kali, and for Swamiji, he liked this idea of worship of the terrible. That was also something that was more an element in his spiritual mood than it was for Sri Ramakrishna, that to worship God in the terrible as well as in the beautiful, that this was something that appealed to his nature also. But this absorption became so great that he had to leave the group. And he went all by himself. This was on Dal Lake. They were on Dal Lake. He took a boat and they went to a very solitary place. And one night he was there just by himself and was deeply thinking about the mysterious nature of the universe, all of the tremendous good and joy together with all the pain and sorrow of the universe. His mind was deeply absorbed in that. And he felt this need to write. And this is when he composed his beautiful poem, the Kali the Mother. So it was really inspired. Many of his poems were inspired, but this more than the others. Really as if he's just holding the pen and the words are coming out. So I want to read that. The stars are blotted out. The clouds are covering clouds in darkness, vibrant, sonant. in the roaring whirling wind are the souls of a million lunatics just loose from the prison house, wrenching trees by the roots, sweeping all from the path. The sea has joined the fray and swirls up mountain waves to reach the pitchy sky. The flash of lurid light reveals on every side a thousand shades of death begrimmed in black, scattering plagues and sorrows, dancing mad with joy. Come, mother, come, for terror is thy name, death is in thy breath, and every shaking step destroys a world for air. Thou time, the all-destroyer, come, O mother, come, who dares misery love and hug the form of death, dance in destruction's dance, to him the mother comes. So this mood stayed with him. And then they say that after that, the pen fell from his hand and he fell unconscious. And he didn't know how long he stayed in that state. Anyhow, he went back to the group. And Sister Nivedita, most of this is from the great master. The great master refers to Swamiji, written by Sister Nivedita. And all he was talking about after that, everything was the Divine Mother. And he said to Nivedita, learn to recognize mother as instinctively in evil, terror, sorrow, and annihilation as in that which makes for sweetness and joy. After this, Swamiji had a desire to go to a very famous shrine to the Divine Mother, Kheer Bhavani. It's not far from Srinagar, and he wanted to go on his own, so he went there, and just as an ordinary pilgrim, this is a place where the Divine Mother, there's a spring that's there, and people offer this kheer, condensed milk or rice pudding, something like that. And the temple itself had been destroyed by some invaders through the centuries. So Swamiji thought to himself, Mother, if I had been here, I would have laid down my life to protect you. Then he heard the voice of the mother scolding him. And later he said to his disciples, No more Hari Om, it is all mother now. All my patriotism is gone. Now it is only mother, mother. I have been very wrong. Mother said to me, What even if unbelievers should enter my temple and defile my image? What is that to you? Do you protect me or do I protect you? So there's no more patriotism. I'm only a little child. So this was a great turning point in Swamiji's life. We may wonder, he went to the West for a second time. He continued his preaching. He still had an interest in the work and everything, but it wasn't the same. And if we read other letters that he wrote back, we see that this feeling of resignation really overtook him at this point. He went back to the West the second time, mostly because he was encouraged to go for his health. If we really look at his incentive, he had no personal interest at that point. In fact, when he came back from the West, what was the first thing he wanted to do? Hand over all of the money to Swami Ramananda. He never wanted to be president of the order and never was. The first president of Belarmath was Swami Brahmananda. So he was finished, really. He wanted nothing to do with it. He went back and again, just the force of his old samskara somehow, he went back to the preaching and working for the movement and everything. But everything was changed after this. And when we think about that statement of Sri Ramakrishna, when you know who you are, when Narendra really knows who he is, he'll refuse to live in the body anymore. My feeling is that it was during this period, and maybe it is a Kheer Bhavani, that now he knew himself as an instrument in the hands of the Divine Mother, a companion of the avatar, and that he had done what he was supposed to do in this Leela, and that his play was coming to a close at that point. The very final day of Swamiji's life was a little bit unusual because he went to the shrine very early that morning and locked it, so no one else would go there. He sat for a long time in meditation, and afterwards he came out and he was heard singing a song, this Kamalakanta song, which I'll... And he mentioned his desire to worship Mother Kali on that coming Saturday, which, of course, this was his last day, so that was not possible. But he was heard singing this beautiful song of Kamalakanta. Is Kali, my mother, really black? The naked one, though black she seems, lights the lotus of my heart. Men call her black, but yet my mind will not believe that she is so. Now she is white, now red, now blue. Now she appears as yellow too. I hardly know who mother is, though I have pondered all my life. Now Purusha, now Prakriti. Male or female, or we can take it as spirit or nature. And now the void she seems to be. To meditate on all these things confounds poor Kamalakanta's wits. So this is very typical worshippers of the Divine Mother, that they will maintain this attitude of not knowing who mother is and not caring. She's my mother. This is enough. You don't have to know why and how everything gets done, that she's my mother, and that I don't care for anything else. I want to close just by reading a little bit from The Master as I Saw Him by Sister Nivedita, quoting Swamiji. How I used to hate Kali and all her ways. That was the ground of my 6 years' fight, that I would not accept her. But I had to accept her at last. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa dedicated me to her. And now I believe that she guides me in everything I do and does with me what she will. So then he also could say that. Sokli Tonricha. Yet I fought so long. I loved him, you see, and that was what held me, meaning Ramakrishna. I saw his marvelous purity. I felt his wonderful love. His greatness had not dawned on me then. All that came afterwards when I had given in. At that time, I thought him a brain-sick baby, always seeing visions and the rest. I hated it, and then I too had to accept her. No, the thing that made me do it is a secret that will die with me. I had great misfortunes at the time. It was an opportunity. She made a slave of me. Those were the very words, a slave of you. And Ramakrishna Paramahamsa made me over to her. Strange. He lived only 2 years after doing that, and most of the time he was suffering. Not more than 6 months did he keep his own health and brightness. The future, you say, will call Ramakrishna Paramahamsa an incarnation of Kali. Yes, I think there's no doubt that she worked up the body of Ramakrishna for her own ends. So I hope you'll all come tonight for Kali Puja. This gives us so many things to think about, these beautiful connections with Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother and Swamiji, and this vast philosophical conception, and this other truth that really this universe is a mystery. Highly mysterious why and how anything happens here. And that if we can learn to take refuge and shelter with Mother, that this will be the best thing we can do. So let us sit now for a few minutes.
Devi sarvabhutaishu matrupena samstita namastasye namo namaha.
Salutations to that divine goddess who dwells within all beings in the form of the mother. Salutations to her again and again. Salutations to her.